Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. And I say this every week, but I'll say it again. We have some big guests this week.
We do have some big guests this week.
We are getting ready to welcome Annie Timmons, the president of the Friars Club, this amazing sports program for kids that operates out of St. Bernard, but draws kids from all over the area. And she's bringing with her an extra special guest.
I think she's bringing Zach Taylor, if I'm not mistaken.
She is.
Because he's got nothing to do. I mean, it's the off season.
Nothing's happening with the Bengals right now. But Coach Taylor, this is a program I'm told that he really believes in. And he's the headliner of the Friars Club big fundraiser annual dinner on March 1st. So we're going to hear about that dinner. And then I feel like we should definitely talk Bengals.
Yeah, I'm curious to learn how the Friars Club made the connection to Coach Taylor. Because I'm sure every organization in town wants to pick up the phone and say, Coach Taylor, we're having a dinner. Can you come and speak? So for them to land the head coach of the Bengals, I'm curious to find out what the connection is. There's got to be a connection there.
Or Annie's a magician, one or the other.
I've heard amazing things about Annie, too. So that'll be a good guest segment. But before we get to that.
It's all sports all the time.
I guess this week, I am still confused by this. A little bit. But why are we talking about an NHL team coming to Cincinnati? Like, what sparked that out of everything we could be talking about in town? Why earlier this week are we talking about NHL?
So last Friday, the NHL commissioner was at some sort of press conference. I haven't even ascertained like why he was talking, but he was at a press conference and reporters were asking him questions. And they were talking about expansion. And he said, kind of in passing, that he has talked to two cities, Salt Lake City and Cincinnati. And
we lost our mind.
We did. But you know what? It is interesting. I mean, I certainly were interested in, you know, who called him. And I just, every time I've listened to it, I ended up helping with some of that reporting. But every time I've watched the video, I just want to scream a question, who from Cincinnati? Because we don't know. Cincinnati's a place, not a person. So somebody did call him to have, he did say, you know, Salt Lake City's more aggressive of where they're at in some sort of process. In Cincinnati, it seemed like a phone call, very tentative. But somebody from Cincinnati has at least reached out to have a conversation. And it could be that very first conversation. But the question is who, and we don't know. There's lots of speculation of who that might be.
I mean, I could make a short list. I'm not going to do that now because if I say who's on my short list, people might get mad. But what we can do is we can triangulate. Like, why would the need for an NFL team, or why would the interest in NHL team, a hockey team, how would that factor into the calculus of Cincinnati? We know the answer, and that's an arena.
So that, and honestly, those comments came 2 days after. Now, we've been hearing about a new arena for a couple years now. Jeff Birding, who is the president of the Convention and Visitors Bureau Board, is really making the case for why the city needs a new arena and how this could work. And at the Visit Cincy's annual luncheon on Wednesday. So the comments come on Friday. On Wednesday, they talked about how the Chamber of Commerce is going to lead a study about what could an arena look like here? How much would it cost? Who would pay for it? And, you know, does it need a tenant? Has always been like the conversation because we don't have an NBA team or
an NHL team, what you would call a marquee tenant. So the question of an arena, of course, it's not controversial when it comes to, is our current arena adequate? Almost unanimously, people would say no, it's dated. It's not the type of facility that is going to bring us, let's say, NCAA tournament basketball games. It's not going to give us, you know, tier one level concerts anymore. It does serve as the place where the Cincinnati Cyclones play hockey. There are some concerts there. There are some other smaller events. But the talk of it's time to upgrade the arena has been something that has been ongoing. Where there's no consensus is, do we actually need one? Is that the best use of our funding? If we do have one, do we have to have a marquee tenant? Some would say absolutely. Some would say no. It's an investment in the community. And then the whole discussion of where should it go, which this is where things get interesting, because you introduce Jeff Birding as the president of Visit Cincinnati, which is it's a board, and he serves as president on the board now. But his day job is co-CEO of FC Cincinnati, which is behind plans to do a lot of redevelopment around the stadium site. Is there a possibility that Jeff is positioning himself to be one of the sites considered for, or for that area by the stadium in the West End? Could we see that as a on the list of where we might put a new arena?
You know what? He certainly talked about it. So, and there is a whole, like, Visit Cincy itself, it has its own director, Julie Calvert, who you know and has been a podcast guest.
Right. She's the employee. She's the executive director.
There's two main sites really being discussed. They looked at eight places. They just looked at them. But there's really two main things. Do we tear down the current arena and then not have anything for, if let's, we're going to, for this conversation, we're getting an arena, let's say. So do you tear down the current arena and then you go for, you know, 2 years without one while you're rebuilding it or even doing a gut reno? It has to close for a while. Do you do that? And is that the best, because it's on the river right now, is that the best use of riverfront land? Or there's another wide swath of land. Is it enough space? That's kind of the part of the debate too. But a wide swath of land owned by the city that houses CET and WVXU right now, before WVXU moves into its own building. And do we put it there? And so that's kind of, where is it best going to be located? And so that's kind of the conversation there. And Visit Cincy did really ask the city, was thinking about developing that CET site. And Visit Cincy was one of the entities that was like, well, what if we want to put an arena there? But that's under Julie Calvert's watch. And so that was a conversation. In the end, they did cancel that bidding process. Just kind of hit pause, I think, and now in the meantime, they're doing the study. There's lots more to write about this, you guys. Lots more.
So my take is that the pause was out of necessity, because there is a lot happening in terms of Center City redevelopment. There's the expansion of the convention center. There is the plans to build a new convention hotel in the convention district. And right around the corner, we have the negotiations for a new lease for the Bengals Stadium, for Paycor Stadium. Is it a matter of bandwidth? Is it just, was that one project too many to have in the pipeline?
It is a matter of bandwidth, but I'm still not ruling it out. That is what the discussion needs to be. And honestly, you do have to have these discussions or you never get anywhere. We talked about the decking over Fort Washington Way 20 years ago. Now we're talking about what's going to happen in Queensgate, you know, and like preserving all that land. You have to have these early conversations so you can actually do the things later. And I am all for public conversations and none of this happening like in back rooms. So the more people like want to give us a window into what kind of conversations are having, like an NHL commissioner saying, hey, somebody from Cincinnati called, and you know, at the Visit Cincy lunch, really, Jeff Birding really went into what's going on. They unveiled, you know, and it wasn't just to newspaper reporters and TV reporters where they're like, here's all the renderings at that luncheon that anyone really could go to. And a huge, I mean, 1,000 people had to be there at least. 3CDC went through all of the plans for what this convention center is going to look like. The more public these conversations are, the more people have a chance to weigh in. And I do support that and love that.
Well, no one can say there's not much happening here right now. Lots going on. More to come with this story. Let's shift from hockey and arenas to the Friars Club and Coach Taylor.
special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm super excited to welcome Bengals coach Zach Taylor and Annie Timmons, the president of the Friars Club. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate you having us.
Well, nobody can see where we're sitting. We do talk about it a lot. What do you think about the view, Zach?
It's a great view. You got a good shot of our practice fields and our game fields and any concerts going on. So this is the best seat in Cincinnati, I would have to say.
A lot of Bengals fans and Taylor Swift fans in this office. But we are excited to welcome you today because we have not talked about the Friars Club in a long time. And so we're going to get into the history and why you two have partnered up for a big event coming up.
Yes, it's our biggest fundraiser of the year. But Friars Club, we've been around for about 163 years, just getting the kids off the street, giving them a safe, supervised place to go. We started, I think, in 1860 in Over the Rhine. Moved to a building in Clifton in 1931. And we were in that building from about 1931 until 2005. And that building closed. In 2005, it became old, outdated. It wasn't meeting the change in needs of the families we serve. So we closed that. And then I ran the Friars Club for about 8 years out the trunk of my car. We would beg, borrow, and rent space from whomever and wherever we could. And then it took us about 8 years to raise $3.5 million for our new facility that is now located in St. Bernard. And so we have been in that new building for, I think we're getting ready to be in our 10th year. So it's been a great long, long haul. We've had three locations in our 163-year history, and we are still getting the kids off the street. We're still providing a safe, supervised place for them to go. We do a lot of sports year-round, volleyball, basketball, baseball. We have a Gene and Jake Sweeney Learning Center. We also do a summer program, after-school program. We do a literacy program for teenagers, financial literacy. So we do a lot for kids. Our main goal is for kids. And our longest history and longest program is our sports and basketball. But the key is that I think the neatness at about Friars, number one, is our diversity. We have kids from all over the city, from the suburbs to the inner city. And then I think also with the diversity comes our value system, holding kids accountable, holding families accountable for being a part of our program and being a part of the city of Cincinnati. So I think that that is important. So our value system is really key to that kind of sets us apart from other organizations.
Is your programming after school? Like when do you capture the children?
We have about 1,000 kids throughout the year. And so we have an after-school program. We have a summer program, primarily evenings and weekends, especially because our sports programs, the basketball, like that we're in right now, we have about 30 basketball teams playing. I think the key is our programs are athletic in nature, but they're always academic in purpose. We're always trying to teach kids. We're always trying to make sure that they have the things that they need to be successful citizens.
What is your facility like there?
It is wonderful. I think it. I think when we cut the ribbon, it is considered a, quote, a wow. The gym is wow when you walk into it. It's just a big, it's actually four basketball courts in one building. So there are four high school size courts. So we can have four high school size games going on at one time. We've had UC run their camps out of there in the summer. We've had Xavier University practice in there, their early morning practices, depending on if something was going over at the university. It's a great facility.
How did you come to be the president of the Friars Club?
Well, it's a long story because I've been
there. We love long stories here, well, don't we, Burl?
Hey,
I have been there now for this 45 years. I'm going into my 46th year. But I ended
up. You guys, you'd never believe that. I'm telling you, when you're sitting here, you're like, that's not true.
Well, you know, I started when I was 18, just right out of high school. And they had a job opening as a summer camp for the Girls Club. And I applied for it, and Father Maynard, who was the head of the Friars Club, he thought I was too young because I was only 18. But he gave me an opportunity anyway. And I think that's what Friars is about, giving opportunity. And so I think in staying there, I went to college, working the desk, working maintenance, just doing anything and everything there, associate director, athletic director, and eventually becoming the president. And so I felt like that they always gave me an opportunity. My goal was to be a professional volleyball player, but all through my high school, I ended up on crutches because of a bad knee. And then actually I got started refereeing some basketball, and then I got called by the NBA to do the NBA summer hoops. I did the NBA pre-draft, and then I have a bad knee, so my knee went bad again. So I always tell my story that all these dreams and things I wanted to do, I always say my backup plan was always Friars Club, so I ended up at Friars. But a few years back, I think I recognized that it was never my backup plan. It was always God's plan. And he put me in the place where I needed to be, why I needed to be there, and I've been there for years. And now, I mean, the good thing that people did for me, I'm in a position now to do for others. So I've been very, very happy there.
Did you ever think that you were going to raise $3.5 million?
No. It was hard, but it was worth it. The kids, I mean, I think that I feel like our job as adults is to give kids an opportunity to be okay. And we do that by how we act, react, interact with them. I mean, that's another reason why I know with Zach here, that's another reason why I think he's our coach of the year this year at our big event. And that's one of the reasons why I think he's chosen to be our coach of the year is because he also is a super great role model. I know the players are adults, but I guess when you get to a certain age, everybody's a kid to you. And so I think they need leadership. The kids need leadership from Friars. The players need leadership from Zach. And I think those kind of things are the things that we do that kind of set you apart to say, hey, he's a great guy. Friars is a great place.
Talk about how this relationship started. You have your annual fundraising dinner coming up. That's why we want to talk about that, too. I mean, we would love to talk to you anytime, but there's some urgency here because we have the fundraising dinner coming up. And you landed a pretty good headliner with Bengals coach Zach Taylor. How did this come about?
He's picked up the phone and called him, right?
I think I can start with this. You know, I came to Cincinnati. I didn't know anything about the town. I enrolled my kids in sports. The Friars Club was just one. I don't even know how we ended up there, to be quite frank. But my son Brooks at the time was probably in first or second grade. We signed him up for basketball at the Friars Club. His coach, of all the coaches, happened to be Coach Timmons. And so that was just my first exposure. I didn't know she ran the club. I didn't know anything about that. I was just very impressed with how she ran the team, the discipline and the accountability she instilled in the players at a very young age. Taught the fundamentals, was on the parents. There was no acting out towards the officials. I loved that. And then you look around the gym and you see all the values on the walls. You know, respect, responsibility, discipline, sportsmanship, all those things that as a coach, I value. But I was seeing it firsthand with how she ran the whole club. And then you come to realize, I see Annie Timmons court on the court. I come to realize, you know, she's a big part of this thing. She runs the whole thing. But it was just so I was so impressed. My sons loved being a part of Friars Club. Like she said, it brings kids from all different backgrounds onto the same court, and they get a chance to interact, and they're all held to the same standards. And I was just incredibly impressed. And even though my kids now play for their schools and they play less, they still end up over there sometimes in AAU tournaments. But I've just always wanted to be involved with the Friars Club and with what Annie's doing, just because of the appreciation I've had for how she's really built it, you know, in a sense from the ground up. I know it's been going on for 100 years, but you know, when you listen to her talk about how the backboards were in the back of her car and they were traveling around and helping kids have something to do, and then, you know, really built the facility from the ground up. It is an impressive facility. I've now been to about every gym in the Cincinnati area. The Friars Club gym is as impressive as it gets, with how it's run, how clean it is, the four courts that can be set up and they can be transitioned. And I always enjoy when I hear that we've got a game at the Friars Club. I'm always excited about that. And so it's been a great – I've kind of thrust myself into the involvement there and have gotten to know Annie along the way, and glad to be a part of it in any way that I can.
So I have to ask, was Coach Taylor one of those parents that you had to crack down on?
Well, you'd have to find him because he was always really camouflaged. He would come in. He's just very, you know what, he was a great guy. Once they knew who he was and he was there, it was hard, but he always came in and he was just a great father.
Did you feel pressure? Like, oh, I got the son of the Bengals coach on my team.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Number one, he was just a regular guy.
He showed up like another dad.
He showed up just like another dad. Very supportive. I think one day he came over and did the score. Kept the score at the scores table. So he was just like another dad. And actually, you know, I think we appreciate that, him being there. And I think it was just great for us. You know, we were very impressed.
Every parent at one time or another has had to like sit at the scores table. I'm like, you don't want me. And they're like, sit down. You're here today.
Yeah, he didn't mind.
I choose the job. It keeps me occupied during the game. So I'm not yelling at my son or on the officials like I am at my games. And so it keeps my mind occupied and gives me something to do. And I like doing that.
Well, you are wearing your coaching warm-ups. Are you still coaching?
I do. I still coach. I work.
How do you have time running the?
Well, I will always make time for kids. So I have a little. Actually, I have a little second and third grade team. We have not won a game yet. And my lesson to them is I'm used to having teams that are always winning first place, second place, but it doesn't matter what team I have. It's not about winning. It's about learning. And so I just try to encourage them and keep them going no matter what, and then try to start to build a program for their team and their school because I'm working with their school. Yeah, so it's good. I love it, you know.
So if you only know about the Friars Club because of signing a kid up for basketball, can you talk a little bit about you said earlier before we started recording that, or actually you said it during the podcast, that it's about sports, but it's bigger than that. Talk a little bit about how that message is delivered to the community.
Well, I think it's always about life skills. I think that's what we're about, trying to teach kids valuable life skills through all of our programs, like our after school program, whether it's the after school, whether it's the summer program. We have a website so that people can always go on the website and sign up for our programs. I think it's www.friarsclubinc.org.
You're good at this. Okay, good.
But we do have a website. And so anybody that's interested can always sign up. We start actually working with kids at age 4. We start basketball at age 4, and then we go up all the way up through high school. We don't do a lot with high school, but we do a high school league in the fall. But mostly, I would say our niche is usually the kids are anywhere from kindergarten up through 4th or 5th grade, the younger levels. A lot of times, once kids get a little bit older, they tend to go to their school and school teams. But we also have other things other than just the sports. We do the volleyball. We have volleyball for boys and girls. We do baseball. We offer baseball teams. So, and then our learning center. I just kind of a neat story the other day. One of our after-school kids ended up was getting all D's and F's, and their parents signed them up for our learning center, and now the kid's getting all A's and B's. So I think that there's a lot of things going on there other than just the sports and those positive things that we try to bring to the community.
So, Zach, you're being honored at the dinner. I think you're speaking at the dinner. Talk a bit about how, you know, you're a busy person too. Why the Friars Club?
Well, like I said, it just made such a strong, natural impression on me. Nobody went out of their way to, just because I was the head coach of the Bengals, to try to get something out of it. You know, I never felt that. I went in, I watched my son, I watched how he was treated. I watched how all the other kids, all the parents were treated. I loved how the officials conducted themselves. I loved everything about it. And so it just made strong enough impression. And then naturally, I just got to know Coach Timmons. And like I said, even though my kids aren't necessarily in the programs there right now, I still think it's important to stay involved because like she said, you know, my kids are very blessed. They have tremendous opportunities but I see some kids that maybe don't have those same things that are given to them. And Annie does a great job to involve them and to get them to be able to do something after school and get them in the after school learning program and teach them all the values that are important in life. And I just have so much respect for that process and everybody involved with Annie and her team. And so again, it's something that I felt like if I'm going to commit my time and energy, and that's something that is worth my time and energy.
Well, I think you have a good headliner for the dinner.
Can people still buy tickets and everything for the dinner?
They can still buy tickets. We would love you to be there. We've got quite a bit going on. So they need to do is go to the website at that friarsclubinc.org or call our, you know, they can call our office. We're 513-488-8777. So they can call us at any time. I have a vice president, Sandy Sieben. If they talk to her, she's the one that will get them aboard.
And they've got a little bit of time. The dinner's March.
It's March 1st on a Friday, 5 o'clock. We have cocktails, 6 o'clock. We have dinner and 7 o'clock. We have the program. We're honoring, Zach Taylor's our Coach of the Year. We have the Joel Cornett Family Foundation as our Francis Award for the work they do with young, you know, athletes in heart conditions. And then we also have Sean Mason, who is a vendor here through Cincinnati, who's done a lot with coaching and helping us at the Friars Club. So we have a slate of great people who've done some great things. And Friars always wants to acknowledge others in the community that do the things that we do.
Okay. Well, I think we also, since we have you here, Coach, we need to take advantage of the situation, correct?
Go for it.
There's going to be some Bengals fans listening.
This would be your advice to me, so I'm going to give it right back to you, 100%.
So we talked a little bit as we were coming up the elevator about the off season, and I asked you, you know, how's the off season going? And the first thing you said was busy. So you had to hire a new offensive coordinator, but that's not everything. Tell us a little bit about what's the off season like for you?
Well, right now it is making sure our staff is intact. And Brian Callahan had a great opportunity to leave for the head coaching job of the Titans. And so that opened up some opportunities at offensive coordinator. We promoted Dan Pitcher. It then opens up the quarterback job, which we've been conducting interviews for.
Quarterback coaching job. Everybody just like had a mini heart attack there for a minute.
I feel like that line is really long. I could be wrong, but like.
we've had some really good candidates internally and externally. That's a process that you enjoy. You get a chance to meet people around the league and hear how their things are done at other places. And ultimately, we'll find the best candidate for the job. And so we've devoted a lot of time and energy to making sure we have the right staff chemistry, camaraderie, and it's best for the players and best for the Bengals. And so that's the process we undergo right now. Once we finish that up, we turn to the player acquisition. You know, we've got free agency. We have the combine coming up. And so our staff will start assisting Duke Tobin and our personnel staff with the evaluations of the players that we need to bring into the building.
What is Joe's role in? Does he get to like see the short list, or does he help with the whole thing? Or
Joe is very much involved. You know, I think the quarterback in a lot of ways is an extension of the coaching staff. You know, they have to think very similar to how you think. And a player that puts in the work that Joe Burrow puts in, I respect his opinion. You know, sometimes he can see things from a better perspective than us detached coaches that aren't on the playing field can see it from. So there's oftentimes I come to him with his opinions on a couple of players that maybe he knows from around the league, maybe draft assessments. And so I think Duke Tobin does a great job of that as well. Is the players whose opinions you really respect because they put in the work and they see it a certain way, we involve them. And if it's best for the Bengals, then we come to a decision that works for all of us.
Joe seemed really involved on the sidelines. I mean, he had headsets on. Was he an unofficial offensive coordinator in that role?
he was, I think, cautious with when he wanted to speak because he's never been in that role before. And so once you get on the headset and you start to hear the things that the coaches talk about, it's an eye-opening experience. But that's what happens over the course of a game. But I think Joe did a great job.
Now, some would say that with Burrow's experience, with you calling a lot of the plays, that the offensive coordinator job is not as demanding it for the Bengals as it might be in other teams.
Pretty demanding. You know, it's really, as I've got all the head coaching responsibilities over the course of the week, that's probably the part of the role people don't picture.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
It's the 6 days of the week leading up to the game where Brian and I shared a brain, so to speak. So when I'm off dealing with the defense or whatever it is, personnel or things with players, he keeps the ball rolling, so to speak, with the staff and the game plan and the meetings with the players. And then oftentimes would catch me up to speed as the week went and as I'd iron it out and get ready to call the game. And so we were talking consistently on the headsets during the course of the game. So now Dan Pitcher steps into that role. It's a valuable role. You know, we like to think the same way. Pitch has done this for 5 years now here with the staff we have currently. He's been here, I think, for 8 years total. So it'll be as seamless as it could possibly be. It's hard to step into Brian's shoes. Brian did a great job. That's why he's a head coach. But I'm excited to see the way that our staff chemistry works now, that, that things have shaken up a little bit.
Can you share any priorities that you are looking for when it comes to players?
Not yet. You know, it's, I think
generally
that's
speaking,
that's the part I think people would be surprised by is, you know, during the season, the coaches coach. And oftentimes when the season ends and you hear about draft picks, this guy's going to be the first pick in the draft, the 10th pick in the draft. No coach has made any evaluation until typically February or March. I haven't watched one snap of any of these college players. I don't know who most of them are. Now, 2 months from now, I will have been caught up to speed by Duke Tobin and staff, and you'll know every player and everything there is to know about them. But right now, if you ask me a player that, that maybe is a prominent player, I might not know anything about them. And that's the part that's exciting about the offseason. You shift from the scheme of the season to now you do the player evaluations. And again, we have a great personnel staff. Our coaching staff supplements that, and we take a lot of pride in that role and helping wherever we can and trying to get the best players for the Bengals.
Do you take any sort of break? It doesn't sound like there's like vacation time in there.
No, we do. You know, the season ended prematurely for us. You know, we didn't expect to end on January 10th or whatever it was. And so usually take about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks off. And my wife and I went to a little vacation spot somewhere on the beach and spent a couple days there. You know, and then our staff got off and they got a chance to go spend time with their family. Cause that's the part where, you know, for 6 months, you know, really July 25th until our last day, you don't really see your family. You know, we don't have Christmas. We did have Christmas off this year because we had an 8-day work week because we played on a Saturday before. That was pure coincidence. Typically you're working on Christmas, you're working on Thanksgiving. You don't get that time off. So to get those 3 weeks off to spend with your family is valuable. Now we're back to normal hours. You know, I'm home for my kids' practices at night and all the games on the weekend. So you get to be a normal parent at this point. But there is that transition period from after the season, those 3 weeks where you need to spend some time with those close to you.
How long does it take you to shift out of season mode, especially this year when, like you said, prematurely you're not playing in January?
Right. It's hard to wrap your head around. You know, when you're watching these games on TV, it's frustrating because we play all these teams. We've beaten some of these teams. Some of them we didn't. So it's hard to watch these big moments that we're not a part of, that we're used to being a part of. In some ways, hey, you got to find the silver lining. Our season didn't go the way we wanted. We weren't in the playoffs. We got a chance to sit at home and let that fuel us a little bit as we watch these other teams and hear all the conversation. And I'm walking through the airport during the divisional game and the security guys announcing the score of you know, the Chiefs-Bills game. And I'm thinking, we should be in that game. That should be me on the field and some guy announcing that at an airport, that what are the Bengals doing right now? So there's things like that stick with you, that motivate you. Not that we needed any more motivation, but we're excited already to get back on the field and start getting ready for next year.
It's got to be motivating. I was going to ask you about managing expectations. You've been to the Super Bowl. You're one of three Bengals head coaches in the history of the franchise to actually have been to the Super Bowl. What was it like for you after that year to manage those expectations?
We welcome the expectations. That's part of coaching in pro sports, is whether you have earned them or not, there's always high expectations. And that's why you want this job. You want the passion from the fans. If you don't have the passion from the fans, the expectations, you're probably at the wrong place. You're probably at a place that when they don't have those expectations to be a Super Bowl team every year, and they don't have that passion when you fall short, it's not really worth doing. You know, you want that. And so that when that payoff comes on the back end, when we do win a Super Bowl, it was all worthwhile, and all the things leading up to it were worth it. And so we love the expectations. We love the passion. We'll never shy away from that. And again, we've got higher expectations for ourselves than anybody's got for us.
And now you have something to prove again.
We always have something to prove, whether we've gotten to the top of the mountain or not. You know, it's always trying to get back there. And our first year, we went 2-14, and we preached to our players, everything we're doing is at a Super Bowl level. How we practice, how we walk through, our standards for being on time, our standards on being disciplined and not getting penalties. We're doing it now so that when we're playing for a Super Bowl, there's nothing shocking and there's nothing that we're going to change about our culture. And the players who were able to see that through, I think, can appreciate that process we went through. It was difficult, you know, getting everyone on board and making sure through the losses people could see what we were trying to work for. And there's certainly a lot of players that we hold near and dear to our heart that helped us through that process with the rest of the players. And a lot of those got to see what it's like to win an AFC championship and back-to-back divisions and get to the Super Bowl. And now we got to get back.
Well, I think Cincinnati fans like to remind everyone that the Bengals were the only team to get in the way of the Chiefs in the last, what, 4 or 5 years. Are they a dynasty?
That's not for me to answer. You know, it's again, we erase the previous year and we move on to the next year. It doesn't matter what you did the year before. I think Kansas City would probably be the first team to tell you that. And again, it's what they have done is what everybody wants to do, you know, and whatever label you want to put on that, they've earned it. And it's on us to take that away and be the team that's at the top.
Do you feel like you watch things different now, having been to a Super Bowl, like going into like these 2 weeks and understanding mm-hmm. what the teams have been through? Do you watch things different Absolutely. And think about all what's unfolding in front of us differently?
Yeah, you do. You certainly watch the games and the bigger moments in the games. You've been in those and you try to learn from your experience. And so sometimes you manufacture that experience by watching these other teams be in these situations. I am tired of listening to the radio and turning on the TV and it's all this nonsense about the Super Bowl that really doesn't matter until the game's played. And you forget when you're in it, you don't realize all the media attention because you're so focused in and you're just watching tape and you're in your office and you're paying attention to none of it. And you now I'm exposed to all the superficial elements of all of the things that attract attention over the 2 week period. And for coaches and players, it's all pretty much nonsense. You just want to focus on the game and go play it.
I'm sure you've been asked a million times, like, what is your favorite memory? But now that there has been some time in between, mm-hmm. is looking back, is the thing you think about the most from that time in a favorable way the same thing it was like right after? Like, what is that
thing? I think
thing?
So. I think for me, when we beat Kansas City here to win the division, my third year here in 2021, that stood out because of all the hard work to win the division. So, yeah, we won conference championships, went to the Super Bowl. Those are great moments. But the first one that set all that in motion was beating a top team that had just won a Super Bowl and winning the division in front of our fans. For a lot of us players and coaches, that was the moment we had been working for because you had to do that first step to get to the playoffs and put yourself in the best position. And so to check that first box was the moment that I always remember the most.
All right. Well, can we ask you, what are you going to speak about at the Friars Club?
You know,
do you have your speech ready?
So here's, I'm a little bit of a procrastinator when it comes to that stuff. It's like I was writing papers in college. I waited till the last minute and then I'm going to pump out my best work, you know, but I need to know.
You could be a daily journalist. That's how we operate. We don't,
but it's,
this is true.
We need that deadline otherwise. Yeah,
it is. It's an easier one for me because again, I just walk into that gym and I look at the values on the walls and those are things that, we preach on a daily basis. And so it gives you a lot of easy talking points because the way that they conduct themselves at the Friars Club and Coach Timmons and everybody surrounding her. And so I always jot down ideas in my notes and my phone. And as I think about things, and I was sitting in the gym the other day watching my son play on Saturday morning or Sunday morning and jotting down notes as I was in the Friars gym and kind of assessing. And so I've got things that'll be a framework as I go through the next couple of weeks. But as it gets closer to March 1st, I'll get it locked in.
Is she going to be your editor, Annie? Or are you just going to be surprised as everyone
I'll
else?
I'll be surprised as okay. everyone else.
Well, we can't thank you both enough for taking the time. Coach Timmons, Annie Timmons, President Timmons.
You know, two coaches.
After school teacher Timmons. You wear many hats. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast with this other guy you brought here, Coach Taylor. Thank you, Coach, for the time and for enduring our football questions. I'm sure you're tired of answering by now some of these questions. But I think what you talked about, the AFC Championship game here, I think that was a moment that the city will not soon forget. That was an incredible time where we watched the city come together and the impact it had in a quick time. When you said, what, the two seasons before that, the Bengals were 2-12, I think people forgot about that. I think their sights are set on the Super Bowl. I think you brought that expectation for better or for worse, hopefully for better. So thank you for your time today. And I hope everybody comes out to support the Friars Club dinner.
That's right. It's March 1st on a Friday, 5 o'clock. And our two biggest sponsors of the event is TriHealth and Jake Sweeney Automotive. And they've been great community partners for us.
Well, you had to drop TriHealth because right next to you is our good friend, Jeanette.
I know. She's part of the reason the building is up because they have been great. They have been great community partners.
So thank you, Jeanette, for helping us pull this together.
I appreciate it.
All right.
You know what? That was a fun at the end there. I'm super excited for the Friars dinner, but that was a fun walk down memory lane at the end there. It is hard to kind of look over at the stadium and you can
see it be empty in January.
And you see the kind of like the cleaning up of things
right.
And like you like there's cleanup crews working down there and everything. It's like you could tell it's the end of the season stuff. And it's really sad that we're not in it, but I am. I'm like the kind of fan that's like, yeah, we'll be in it next year. And already
have to be optimistic. And, you know, Coach Taylor is probably the most positive person you will ever meet. But for him to say, you know, walking through the airport, listening to, you know, over the PA system at the airport, them doing the score of the Chiefs Bills game and realizing, oh, that should have been us. That's real.
Yeah.
I mean, fans feel that way. Can you imagine you're carrying that extra load of I am the head coach of the Bengals and we're not in the playoffs? That had to be that was a nice window into
was being very kind. I think it's probably must be difficult seeing as what his favorite moment is beating the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl. It must be very difficult to watch.
Well, I was going to ask you, Sherry, because I know where you were, but where were you when the Bengals almost won the Super Bowl in 2022?
I was in section 513 of SoFi Stadium, thanks to you.
I don't think I knew that.
Thanks
to
you.
Your section was 513?
Mm-hmm. And my dad, who bought my Super Bowl ticket, but I did go for work. I spent the week there, and that's how I feel now. How he felt like walking through the airport is like, as we record, like yesterday, the team's like, all the news is the team's landing in Las Vegas where the Super Bowl is. And I was like, oh, I want that to be us. It will be again next year. I am hopeful for that. But I was in section 513. You know what? The whole game, we were so hopeful. And it really was a very enjoyable experience. It was like the highest of highs where you thought you were going to win. And then the lowest of lows. As much as we've been like making fun of me for crying on the podcast, I do cry at emotional moments, but I don't typically cry over sports. That's not really who I am. But I did cry on the long walk back to the hotel because I planned no transportation.
Yeah, I mean, your emotions get so high and then there's that kind of like release of it all. I saw that firsthand. I wasn't in California for the Super Bowl, but I was at the Holy Grail. And the reason I was there, and here we're going to go, we're going to peel the curtain back a little bit, is I think all our listeners have seen when there's like a World Series or a Super Bowl, all of a sudden people have these printed editions of the newspaper that say, you know, World Champs or Super Bowl Champs or whatever. Those are called stunt editions. It's basically we print front pages out ahead of time, anticipating the win. And then we go to different locations and hand them out. So we had a few of them, thanks to you and a few others, actually at the Super Bowl. But the Holy Grail was the one of the big watch parties, and the network was already there. So when I think it was NBC had the Super Bowl that year. So whenever the network broadcast of the Super Bowl wants to show, like, and here's the fans in Cincinnati, the camera lit up at the Holy Grail. Okay. And so we were there with these copies of the stunt edition ready to hand them out. And then when it looked like, you know, when the game took a turn and it looked like, you know, things weren't going to go our way, I had to quietly like make sure they stayed in the bag, they didn't get out and destroy them all. But talk about emotion. As the final seconds of the clock ticked off at the Holy Grail, grown men were weeping openly, like collapsing into puddles of goo into the arms of their wives and girlfriends. Like inconsolable male ugly crying was going on that night. And here I am. It was so sad. I have this big bag of like Super Bowl Bengals, Super Bowl champ, you know, special stunt editions that couldn't see the light of day.
I did commiserate with all the Lions fans this year because the end of that game was really kind of the feeling is, you know, I wasn't as emotionally invested in that, but I was really rooting for them to have the kind of moment that the Bengals had that year and then to lose in the playoffs like they did at the last minute. I was like, yeah, I've been there.
Well, as we record this, it's Tuesday on Super Bowl week. Sherry, who do you like?
Neither.
None of the above.
I should like the 49ers because the owners are from my hometown of Boardman, the DiBartolo family. And, you know, they're the, you know, much like, you know, our big, you know, philanthropy, wealthy families did so much of like sponsorship of things that I was involved in and everything. So I guess I really should like them. But I can't in good conscience root for the Midwest team there. Going to move on to next year.
Well, I'm a philosophy is you root for the person who won the division because then you can say, well, we have the toughest division. And,
And
the Bengals are really the only team that have knocked the Chiefs out of the playoffs.
And that's the best stat there is.
Since they've been on their run. So if the Bengals aren't going to make it, I'm going to have to like, go for the Chiefs. Chiefs by three.
Okay.
It's not going to be a gimme for them. I think they win by three. That's what I'm going with. And then the whole Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift extravaganza.
If you're on TikTok and you're a woman, you have to follow along. It's almost like some sort of rule.
Anyway. All right. Well, so we wrap this up, Sherry?
Yes. All right. You guys, thank you for listening to That So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Inquirer and Cincinnati.com.
That's So Cincinnati is sponsored this week again by Cincinnati.com, the online home of The Enquirer. If you'd like to sponsor an episode listened to by thousands each week, email me personally at belove@cincinnati.com.
That's So Cincinnati was produced today by Phil Didion, Sam Green, Lisa Gillespie books our guests. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe to your favorite podcast platform and share us with a friend.
And finally, if you value local journalism, please consider a digital subscription to The Enquirer. Just click on subscribe at the top of cincinnati.com. And remember, you can taste the bright lights, but you won't get them for free.